Welcome to Booking the Territory, a pro wrestling podcast hosted by Mike Mills and Doc Turner. This podcast is all about what's going on in the world of professional wrestling. And now, here's your host, Mike Mills.
Okay, Booking the Territory fans, today I have part two of my conversation with Big Daddy Yum Yum, Byron Wilcott, one of the top independent stars working in the independents today. But before we get into the second part of my conversation with Big Daddy Yum Yum, of course I got to give a little love to my sponsor, and that would be TNA's Wrestling Palace. They are located in the Dallas-Fort Worth area in Grand Prairie, Texas at Trader's Village. If you're in this area, stop by, go see them. They have everything related to your wrestling memorabilia needs, such as replica belts, toys, action figures for the kids, toy rings, you name it, they have it. Check them out on Facebook at TNA's Wrestling Palace. They're your one-stop shop, like I said, for all wrestling memorabilia needs. They're also on Twitter at TANDASWRESTPALC. Even if you're not in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, they will ship to you, so give them a call. Their phone number is 682-561-6966. They are really good. They treat us well. They support us, so please help support them. Again, thanks again to TNA's Wrestling Palace for all their support. And like I was saying in my opening, this is part two of my conversation with Big Daddy Yum Yum, Byron Wilcott. And this is where things start getting really interesting, because I ask him something that has been out there for a little while that some of you may have heard of. And if you haven't, well, you will now. And it's very interesting. A couple of years back, he made a post about Kia Stevens, which most of you would know by the name of Awesome Kong. And I flat out asked Byron before he got started. I said, hey, man, look, I respect your wishes. Is this thing off limits? And he said, no, man. He said, I've been knowing you. Go ahead. Shoot with me. And I'm an open book. I said, all right, man. So by the time we got to this part in the interview, I flat out just asked him what was going on with that situation and what the deal was with that. And it was an interesting discussion. So I know you will enjoy it as a wrestling fan and kind of getting some of the background of it. And Byron's a good guy. You'll find the story interesting. So sit back and relax and listen to that. He also goes over his time after FCW, the former developmental for WWE, and then working with the NWA right now, and going over to Japan. It was he also went over some of the top indie talents. I asked him, you know, name me some names that people don't know of that they should know of, and some of the top guys that are running around the indies today. And that was some good information to know, because what I'd like to eventually do is I'll get some of those guys on, because get them to share their story, because you know, there's always a story behind every wrestler. So all right, with that being said, just make sure, one quick thing before we get to part two, make sure you're following us on Twitter. That's at BTT_podcast. Make sure you're following us on Facebook. That's under Booking the Territory. Very easy to find. If you pull it up, you'll see it. We got the blue black logo with the wrestling ring in the back. And I appreciate everyone who's followed us and listened so far. I had a couple listeners ask me for my Twitter. So my Twitter is at Mike504Saints. That's at Mike504Saints. Yes, I'm a Saints fan. If you don't like it, oh well. But hey, let's get to part two of that conversation with Big Daddy Yum Yum, Byron Wilcott, right now.
I hate to segue to another topic on another note. So I can't remember at what point you left or were out of FCW in the developmental. Mm-hmm. What year was that?
I got signed in November 2008. I left in 2010, like February of 2010.
Did you right away get? I know you were working indies at that point. At what point did I'll call it like the NWA comeback, even though the NWA never really went away. There was indies that were involved with the NWA name and brand. Mm-hmm. At what point did you really get like ramped up with NWA?
Like, I'll be honest. Let's see. Like, the NWA started back coming to Texas with David Marquez back when I first, I don't know when I first, either before I got signed or right after I got back. I don't remember which, but, Marquez was a cool dude. There was this dude but Marquez was in Dallas, or not Dallas, in California, but he'd come to Texas so often and do some shows. and have his people on him here in Houston and stuff like that. And so I went to one of those, and it was it was phenomenal. He did a really good job. However, the local NWA promoters were the shits. What was that dude's name? I cannot think of his name. NWA Southwest. What is it? We were in NWA Southwest.
I know who you're talking about. The name's on the tip of my tongue, but I can't remember.
I'm going to Google it right quick. Because I love shitting on this dude any chance I get.
Oh, man. I know who you're talking about because they were running.
Everybody knows it.
Well, they were running back when I first started. They were running in Dallas and Fort Worth because I can remember. Oh God, what was that guy's name? It slipped my mind, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's right on the tip of my tongue. I'm looking it up.
I heard Randy say this one day. That's why I'm.
Ken Taylor.
Okay.
Dumb son of a gun. He was the dumbest son of a gun I ever met down here in Texas. And like he thought he was hot stuff because he was the only, like back then the way they did the NWA, there was one dude in the state and you had to go through him to get licensing. And I swear he hardly ever ran a show. His shows would always be through somebody else. But he is just a dummy. And like NWA Southwest, I guess it was the bomb at one point.
It was. There was a time. That's what I was gonna tell you. There was a time when I got started. And I never worked for them, but in the mid '90s, they were working probably once a week, every 2 weeks. There was a point that they were doing that it was going good because I know Rod Price worked for them.
Rodney Mack worked for him. Rod Price.
Rodney worked. Kevin Northcutt worked for him too at that point. So I know there was a time when it was going. I guess you'd say going well. I don't remember,
no,
but I know they had TV.
I'm just talking about this dude, Ken Taylor. He was dummy.
What I've heard is it got bad. What I heard is that promotion, not the time period. I'm talking about in the 90s, but later on, there's been a few people who go, man, it turned into crap and whatnot. So
yeah,
I'll let you continue.
But so Ken Taylor was the only before I met Marquez. Ken Taylor was the only NWA promoter I knew of, and he was a total shithead. And so I didn't really have that much to say about NWA. And then Bruce, I think Tony Brooklyn, I met Tony Brooklyn, and he was taking over NWA Houston. And so I met him, and he was really cool. I really liked him. We did a show with Randy. And he licensed that show as an NWA show. He was kind of like they changed up the way NWA was doing business, and Tony Brooklyn was coming in, and he was kind of like the NWA dude in Houston or in Texas now, one of the NWA dudes. And so I liked him, and so chit-chatting with him, talking to him, and he seemed like what he was doing I liked, and I thought we could do some stuff together. So he changed the perception. Marquez was a cool dude, and I always had good feelings towards him when I met him. But Ken Taylor ruined it for me. And so once Tony Brooklyn took over around here and started doing stuff, people started getting on board and seeing how he was, and I ended up doing a show for him. And then I think I didn't hear from him for about 2 months, and then he started bringing me back, and I've worked for him ever since. Tony Brooklyn, Bruce Tharp, they ended up owning NWA later on, and it was just, they're just really cool. He's a cool person to be around, and so I kind of just started doing NWA stuff as well, and like a lot of people in Texas started doing NWA, and it brought a camaraderie, and everybody was working towards the equal goal. And trying to use the best talent available. So now you had 6 shows in Texas using 6 or 7 of the same guys. So these guys had bookings every week. These guys had somewhere to go, and they had a booking. So it was really good for the talent. really good for the wrestling promotions that were part of it, because now you had access. You didn't have to just stay with this local talent. You could go and work, get a Jack Stane or Big Daddy Yum Yum or Houston Carson, and, you know, those guys can travel together, save costs, and it was just really, it was a smart idea, a really smart idea. So that's how I ended up getting into it and just rolled with it from then there.
Yeah, now, I mean, from at least from what I know, would you say that's the bulk of what you're doing?
Actually, no.
No? Okay.
No, like, the bulk of what I'm doing is with Main Event Pro Wrestling, which actually used to be a part of the NWA, and it's one of the hottest promotions out right now. They were a part of the NWA. We're not now.
I thought they were. That's why I said that. I thought they were still. That's why I said that. But go
we
ahead.
Were.
Okay.
But
okay.
Tony Brooklyn decided to kind of go his own way. Main Event Pro Wrestling decided to go their own way. And I'm the heavyweight champion there. And so really Main Event Wrestling, we have anywhere, our lowest show ever was 800 people. Mm-hmm. Generally the shows we do draw anywhere from 1,000 to 1,200 people. And, just really good shows, really good talent. And we're a traveling show we're off for the summer. We come back in October, but every 2 weeks we're at a different state, a different city doing a wrestling show. So it's really, to me, I think, Main Event Pro Wrestling is the hottest wrestling company south of the Mason-Dixon line. I don't think anybody's actually doing it to the level that we're doing. So
yeah, we talked about I know we talked about a Main Event. What I was telling you was I haven't been to a Main Event show. My weekends are generally kind of packed with other stuff. I told you flat out. I'm like, man, I see the pictures. This one, that's the great thing about social media nowadays, man. You can see the pictures
and
promotions. And oh man, I mean, you know. The thing is, when you consistently – my judge of a promotion a lot of times, if I'm not there, what I can use as a barometer, so to say, is, well, if I see a promotion and every time they have a card, there's 600,000, 700,000, 800,000 people there, you know, that just ain't luck. It usually means that there's a product that's being put out there that fans are going to go and see, and they want to go and see it. So that's like, you know, I use that a barometer. Like, you know, for example, Wildcat, every time I see a freaking pitch, well, I've been to their show, so that's not a fair example.
Yeah.
They're good.
Oh,
but
their show is awesome. Wildcat.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean.
Well, I'm a Wildcat. I'm actually a Wildcat, too, you know, so.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, but my point is, and I love Luke to death, but, you know, like I watch, oh, yeah, he is. You know, you see shows like Wildcat and the Main Event. You got these freaking fans, and there's 1,000 people in a building, man. That, like, people don't realize, you know, on the indie scene, man, you're doing something when you put that many people in a building, because you're not
it's
talking
not
about
easy.
It. No, it ain't easy, and you don't have national television exposure. You don't have, you know, you don't have the advertisement that bigger companies have. So you're putting all these people in a building, and that's saying something. That's saying a lot, actually. So
thanks,
I see the pictures, man, and you know, I've always respected you and your work in the ring, man. I think you're top-notch. And so I know when I look at a Main Event card, I'm like, yeah, they're gonna put on a good show tonight. And you can see it. I mean, the fans are showing up to see it.
Yeah, you know, we use quality guys. We use Jack Zane. We use Lince Dorado from out in Florida. We've used Teddy Hart before. We've used Houston Carson, Barbie Hayden, Safari. We got some unique talent. Like our women, we have Safari, we've got Barbie Hayden. We're trying to get Athena, but Athena's just always busy. Like, she's the best, so she's always busy somewhere. But our women's division is really awesome. Our guys, we're using top notch talent that just looks the part and is able to deliver and give people something that they want to come see. And that's the cool thing about us, you know.
Yeah, no, I hear you, man, and it shows, you know, from the fan response and what I see, man. It's again, you put on an indie show and you put 1,000 people in the building. I don't want to hear the crap about, you know, why there's 1,000 people. The fact is, there's 1,000 people there.
Exactly,
and they're into it,
and they keep coming back. We had a show We had 1,100 people at the last show that we had in Carthage. The year before that, we had like 950. So we had more people than we had the first time that we were there. So that's always something good, you know. They're coming back. They're enjoying the show. And that's what we're shooting for.
Yeah, and there's nothing – you and I both know. I mean, there's nothing like it's one thing to work in front of 100 people versus 1,000.
It feels a lot better.
Oh, my God. Whole lot better.
And whole lot better. That's one thing also. We sell merchandise, man. You know, you got so many people. Like, Tim Storm's walking out of there. He's a bad guy. He's walking out of there selling $600 worth of merchandise, you know, as a bad guy. So, everybody's doing pretty good on the show, man.
Yeah. No, that's a good thing. And I know, and I'm going to segue into something else. With the whole NWA thing, you had the opportunity to – we talked about this briefly when I saw you, but you had the chance to go to Japan. How was it?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
My opinion, me going to Japan was on me.
Okay.
Like, I didn't get the opportunity because of somebody. Well, I did what it took to showcase myself.
I had
the guys over there. I went to the seminar before that the Japanese guys were having. I learned to speak Japanese. Me and Ricky Starks. Ricky Starks, young man he's from New Orleans. I think he lives in Texas now, in San Antonio or Austin. He's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Me and him both, he speaks it better than me. But me and him were both studying Japanese. We knew that this was coming up. And so we both had the same mindset. Hey, we're going to learn to speak Japanese so we can talk to them. So I bought me a Drive Time CD. I'd listen to it everywhere I go. I got a book. I read it. And so when it came time to do the match, we just so happened to get paired up. And so as we're in there, me and him have a conversation in Japanese and talk to the people. We talked to Gato and Tenzan and the other guys that were there in Japanese. So it immediately made us stand out. And then so we had the match. And in my opinion, it was the best match that they had on the for the tryout. Me and Ricky Starks had the best match. No mistakes. Mm-hmm. Good story. Hard hitting. And I ended up getting brought over. You know, like who is it? Tiger Hattori called me personally. They didn't call NWA and go, hey, you know, we want you to come over. It was like, hey, we want you to come over and wrestle, you know,
I got
for
you.
An NWA representative. So it was me doing what I needed to do, having my body right, having new gear, got my hair done the day before and looked like $1 million when I show up, and then took the time to go, hey, let me learn their freaking language. And that is rudimentary, you know, no more than, hello, how are you? I'm Big Daddy Yum Yum, blah, 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 which uniquely, Oki Chichi Yama Yama, Big Daddy Yum Yum, or Oki Oshun Yum Yum, Yama Yama, Big Daddy Yum Yum. However, Chichi, Oshun, father, Chichi, daddy. However, Chichi also means titty. So,
right.
It's dual. It can mean either or depending on which way you say it. So I would get a laugh when I would say Oki Chichi Yama Yama, and I'd get a laugh because they weren't sure if I was saying Big Father Yum Yum or Big Titty Yum Yum. So they later smarted me up that I should probably use Oshun instead of Chichi because there's not enough words that I'm saying to figure out the context.
I got you.
Anyway, interesting story.
No, that's cool, man. I like to hear stuff like that. That's cool.
So that's where I would go, that, you know, preparation, anybody who's trying to do something, don't depend on this person or that person to do it for you. Preparation meets opportunity equals success. You got to be prepared.
Yeah. No, you're right about that. You gotta make your own way, man. Nobody gonna get it for you. That's the truth.
Yeah. And so that's what we're just trying to do with Main Event, stay prepared and reach out there and do what we can. When I was in Japan, I ended up getting to wrestle for the NWA World title twice, once against Tenzan and once against who was the other guy I wrestled? Not Shibata. Can't think of his name right now. John Blank. Come on, help me out.
I can't remember. Oh, I knew, man, about Tenzan, but I didn't know about the second one.
He was actually the first one. I can.
The first.
John Blank. he's the only guy who held the New Japan and All Japan title. Anyway, we'll come back to it.
You got me stumped on that one. But how was Tenzan? How was that one?
Tenzan was awesome. I wrestled him, had a really good match with him, pretty unique. I ended up going to give him a hangman, and you know I'm a man and a half, so you know I thought he was probably 250 pounds, but he must weigh 230 because I threw him over that top rope into the outside. And I don't know my own strength.
I tell you what, I sit there and watch I watch that New Japan stuff on that one on Access TV. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
Uh-huh.
And man, dudes over there go at it. That's all I'm gonna say.
Oh, they go at it. They ain't no punk.
Hey, there's no ain't nothing light about what I see.
Oh no, they're really good talent.
Oh yeah.
The first time I went over there, I wrestled Kojima. That was it. So Teoshi.
Oh, okay.
And and it was for the title. He had the title. And really good times. And that match, like, he does machine gun chops, where basically he's in the corner and he chops you really fast, you know, with a whole bunch
right.
of rapid-fire chops. And usually people get that and they stand there and they grit their teeth. Me, I got chopped and I went crazy. I'm like, oh, it hurts. I'm throwing my arms, throwing my legs everywhere. And it got a really good reaction on television there. The crowd was eating it up. Some people here didn't understand it. They're like, I don't get it. That was crazy. That didn't make sense. It made total sense. You just weren't there. And so when I went back, I saw Nakamura. He was like, oh, yum, yum. Good to have you back. You sell again. And I'm like, huh? He's like, you sell again like you did last time, many memes. And I said, memes? It's mine? And he's like, no, meme, M-E, or no, many memes. And I was like, memes? And he's like, M-E-M-E on internet. No, say gift, many gifts. And I was like, oh, I got gifts? Because they're like all like Nakamura and Tanahashi, they're the most
mm-hmm.
popular. And they get these big bags. That are in the locker room just full of cakes and candy and things that the fans have brought to them. So the fans bring these bags and they give them to them and they take them up to the locker room.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
They've got these gifts. And so he's like, oh, yum, yum, you back again. Many gifts last time. And I was like, oh, I got gifts? I didn't even get them. They didn't give them to me. Who got my gifts? And he's like, oh, no, 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 not gifts. Gift, G-I-F. And I'm like, oh. He's like, can you sell it? I'm like, oh, okay, awesome. But apparently the Japanese loved it, and they flooded the internet with gifts of me doing the selling his machine gun chops. So
I'll be damned.
Yeah, gifts.
So, yeah, no. Tanahashi and Okada. Tanahashi and Okada, man, I've watched them, man. Man.
Yeah, Okada's awesome, man.
Definitely. You see – I mean, that says a lot, just the fact that you're in the same locker room as them, man. I mean,
oh, for sure.
No other way to say it. I mean, you're in there because one thing about the guys over there, from everything I've ever read, I've never been to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
But man, by the time they get the spots they have, there's no doubt they've earned it.
Oh yeah.
I mean, them dudes, they earn it. I mean, just from everything they deal with, from the time they start in the business. It's a different world than from in the States, from what I gather.
It is.
Yeah. So, all right. So, moving away from Japan now, knowing I talked to you, you had a good time. They treated you good.
Sure.
So So as far as now, I got a question for you. People that don't know, give me the top guys that you know of in the indies right now that maybe, you know, because of, you know, not being on TV every Monday night, people don't know about.
I don't know. Like, I hadn't really been traveling a lot of indie promotions. I've been really focusing on Main Event in New Japan and stuff like that. But okay. So my list may not be, I guess, as far as a national list, but just as guys that I've come across and met.
That's fine.
Steve Anthony is, like, awesome. Awesome in the ring. Does some really good stuff. I really like him. Looks the part. Always comes ready to work. Humble. I think he's a really good talent that if you get a chance to watch, you should definitely check out one of his matches. Matt Justice is a name a lot of people may not know, but is a up-and-coming Main Event player. He actually went to WWE and recently, I think last week, and he was he worked with Titus O'Neil there. So he's somebody that you might want to check out, might want to watch.
Okay.
Who else? Action Jackson. He's a high flyer. He worked for Matt Riviera's company, TCW, back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Really good guy. Real exciting. Keep your eye on him. Who else? Matt Palmer. Matt Palmer out of Dallas, Texas. He's phenomenal. He's really good. He's just got to get out there more. Just got to go more places. But, like, he's very exciting. I love watching him. Wrestle.
Gotcha.
As far as there's nobody better than Athena. Athena is hands down to me one of the best female wrestlers out. You know, she's better than most men. I'll be honest. Like, she's probably a better wrestler than me. Ain't no problem. She's better than me. I wish I could do half the stuff she could do. But Athena is awesome. Like, she.
So if anybody's out there listening, they should YouTube her.
Yeah, you should definitely YouTube Athena. Like, she is phenomenal. She, you know, the top rope stunner that Athena tries to do,
mm-hmm.
she actually does it. Like, she does it. It's called the O-Face, I believe. And she's really good. Like, I don't think there's anybody around that can beat her. Like, as far as in-ring capability and showing off, like, everything she does is pretty much perfect. Let's see. Pretty sure I got a couple more. Gimmick-wise, the Manimal is pretty fun, a fun gimmick for kids, you know. He dresses as a caveman. He comes out, does his thing. Houston Carson, looks like Superman. He looks like He-Man. He's like the indies version of Triple H, man. He's a pretty tough guy, pretty swole.
I've seen him work on Wildcat shows. I've actually been a couple where he's been on them. So yeah, I definitely agree. I've seen him do it, and he's very talented, very good.
And you can't mention Carson without mentioning Barbie Hayden. She's gorgeous. She's beautiful. She's an excellent worker. She's a lady wrestler that's really good as well. So I always love her matches. I always love seeing her on shows. You know, she's total package. She looks the part. She's tall. She's blonde. She's tan. She's every man's dream. So if you're a guy, you're a girl, check out Barbie Hayden. She's awesome.
I hear you. It's one of those things where you start listing people, and then anybody listening to this later is going to be like, oh, man, he – kind of shunning you, didn't name
it.
Like, no, he's not shunning you. It's what's coming off
his part.
Yeah, at that point,
it's hard.
Yeah, it is.
Like a good list, you know, it's hard.
Yeah,
but I think those are like Matt Justice, Houston Carson, Action Jackson, Barbie Hayden, Athena, Matt Palmer, the Manimal. I'm gonna be honest too. Like, the first indie match I ever saw, Tim Storm headlined it. The last The second to last show I wrestled, Tim Storm was headlining it. And this is over the course of 11 years. When I first met him, he was a headliner, and he's still a headliner on shows. And he looks the part. He looks better now than he did 10 years ago. So old school heel, effective, does what he needs to do in business, easy for people to buy into. We did a press conference, and he was phenomenal at the press conference. He had everybody went kill him. He read a newspaper the entire press conference and got so much heat. Everybody hated him, didn't like him because he wasn't answering questions, wouldn't talk to people. He just said he wanted to say and wouldn't respond to the people's questions with that newspaper until it ended up getting yanked out of his hand, and then he went ape shit, you know. But Tim Storm is really, like, as a heel, you couldn't ask for a better heel to come in and, you know, as a foil for your guy to wrestle, you know. And totally believable. He looks the part. He dresses the part. He comes to the press conference in a suit and ready to go, you know?
Right. Yeah. Hey, that's a big part of it, man. You gotta live it, man. You gotta do it. You know, you can't half step it. You gotta go all out.
You can't. Like that, and that's one of the things about Main Event. You know, we come, you come out, you see the guys. Everybody's looking. There's no tennis shoes. Everybody's in their wrestling boots. Everybody looks the part. They're all, you know, look like they're hitting the gym. You know, no skinny guys, no fat guys, except for the caveman. But he's a caveman. He's supposed to be fat.
Hey, he's good friends with a friend of mine that's not even in the business. So we've been in touch with him. Well, my buddy's been in touch with him about doing the show. So I'm gonna have him on eventually. I just gotta connect with him. So, man, I hear he's a heck of a worker.
Real good worker, and like he knows his role. He comes in there, does what he needs to do. You know, no trouble at all.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, we're gonna get into the. I can't do this without asking you a couple of tough questions. So
ask me.
All right, man. So, because this is the payoff, man. This is the big finish.
We're
taking it home, man. But we're gonna get some good stuff here. So, all right. I'm just going to say a name, and then you tell me what's up. Kia.
Oh, I love her. I got feelings for her. I need her in my life.
I hear you, man.
Together. We should have been together.
I hear you.
Like, basically all that is like, it was me, like, I was getting ready to go to Mexico. And so... You
CMLL,
know,
right? That's when you were training CMLL.
Yeah, I remember that. CMLL with El Gladiator and Archangel. And so I was getting ready to go to Mexico, do that. And I've been on trips before. I've been to Germany. And so, we needed a reason for why I'm leaving. And so, basically, Gia was on Monday Night Raw, and she made note of... you know, that she was going to have to not wrestle because she was pregnant. And so, and I had wrestled a show with her before in Louisiana. And so basically she's like, oh, I have a high-risk pregnancy. I'm going to have to leave wrestling, blah, blah, blah. And so in my mind, it was a storyline at that point, you know. And so all my friends, we were all talking about it, and they're like, oh, well, who got her pregnant? Who's the daddy? That's a hell of a man that got her pregnant. And so I was like, you know what? Big Daddy Yum Yum's a hell of a man. That's my baby boss. I'd be the baby pappy boss.
And you're quoting the movie Life right now. That's...
Yeah. And so that's how that ended up coming up. You know, it was like weird. I was just joking. And, you know, I made a reference on Facebook to it. And I guess it was a slow news day. And Wrestling Inc. and some of the other promotions picked up on the Facebook post, or either somebody, you know, was like, hey, we'll talk to him and be the baby's father. But it was a joke, and it was just for the promotion that I was working at the time. Just, you know, I didn't think anything more of it. But then it garnered publicity, so I'm like, hey, I'll take it. And so
dude,
I just never
it ran.
I just went with it, you know. And so I was the baby, Kia's baby daddy. But I would think that I don't see what the reason to get mad about it for. You know, I'm a good-looking man. You know, I'm a good-looking man. I was like, well, shit, maybe when she comes back, the dub will pick me up and I can be her baby daddy on TV. I'd do that. That'd be a superhuman baby. I'm 6 foot. She's 6 foot. It'd be great.
So here's what happened. I remember reading that. I go, he's got to be bullshit. I read that and I'm like, this dude's working. I know he is. And
yeah.
Then I'm looking, and then it's like it kept popping up on my news feed because you know, like when people comment, then it comes back up.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, I don't remember. I'd have to look back.
There's
like 100 people start commenting on it, and I'm like, oh my god, this thing's taking on a life of its own. And then people are putting it over. I may have even commented on it. I don't even remember. I was like, what the heck? I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me. This ain't happening.
And, like, people started making, like, they're like, well, they were both down in Florida at the same time. She was working for TNA and he was working for FCW, so it's completely possible. You know, so I just rode the momentum. And what happened? Oh, so I get a call one day. And so it's Byron Saxton from on WWE, and he was on NXT at the time. And I think NXT might have done this deal, or he might have still been on it. I'm not sure. But he was on the road. And so he's like, hey, man, I'm here with Tyson Kidd, and everybody's wondering, are you really the baby's father? And I'm like, and I couldn't lie to Saxton because me and him are cool. So I didn't want to lie to him, but I didn't want to throw it out. You know, throw it either. I was like, hey, well, you know, I can't confirm or deny that fact. They're just going to have to make their own opinion. And so he goes, I got it. So you're not the baby's father. And so but he knew from my boys right away. But, the mug, the boys on the road were talking about it and wondering. And they're like, who got his number? Call him up. And so they're all on speakerphone. Did you get that? Is that you for real? But, you know, so. And I wasn't trying to badmouth her or anything. I look up to her. I think she's a phenomenal wrestler. She's put in a lot of hard work. It was never meant to be anything spiteful or anything like that. I respect her. And I'm not going to go out and go lie on her or anything like that.
It was just
a joke that got – it was just for the wrestling promotion that kind of took his life of his own, you know. And, like, I was hit up for interviews about it and stuff, but I didn't do any of them, you know, because, you know, you don't want to lie on something like, oh, that's, like, just outright. I mean, I guess I did, but, you know, I didn't want to just – it was just me riding the momentum. I'm not going to go in on a news radio show or something and go, yeah – it's my baby mama. But
it takes, like, things like that, man, in a wrestling business especially, it takes on a life of
its
own.
I mean, it's a fine line between being a work and then hurting somebody's feelings or something like that.
Yeah.
That was never what they meant. It was never meant to hurt her feelings or cause any strife on her at all. And I actually felt bad because I think she ended up losing the baby. So I felt bad about that. I don't think it had anything to do with me in that situation because that was like 4 or 5 months before that ended up happening. But, never wish any harm or ill on her or anything like that. So it was just
I hear you.
It was just publicity and a joke that we were laughing about that, you know, I could be the baby's father that took on a life of its own and it just happened like that. But
yeah, it just exploded. That's one of those things that before. No, go ahead.
Go ahead. To me,
I was gonna say before.
If you put it out there, people are gonna talk about it, you know, and that's wrestling, you know. If I put out there that hey, I'm leaving or whatever on storyline, well, people are gonna talk about that storyline.
Yeah,
it either is or it ain't. It can't be halfway. You know, I don't put any of my family business on my Facebook, you know, that I don't mind a fan commenting on. You'll never see my nephew or my niece on my Facebook, you know. My wrestling, my Facebook page is, you know, it's me, but it's, you'll see me going places or going out to eat, maybe. Besides my birthday, you'll never see a family member on there.
Yeah, no, you're right. I noticed that. You don't
unless somebody tags me in it, but
I hear you. It's just one of them, man. What you saw with that was the example of social media in the wrestling business, because it took back in the day, if you'd have told that to one person, it would have taken forever to gain any traction, and it would have been word of mouth. You know, with that, you put it out there, and you know, I don't know how many friends you got on Facebook, but at that point, if you got 1,000, 2,000 friends, it just literally breeds on its own, and before you know it, it's like, man, you heard? Oh, you heard? Oh, man, you heard? And then you got all these dudes, they're like, you know, it's wrestling, so they're like, some of them, they're probably like me going, nah, you got to be working. And then others are going, man, nah, man, that seems true, man.
I'm good looking. Yeah, I admit, I'm a good looking man.
Yeah. That's why they call you Big Daddy
Young.
You
do a lot worse than me now.
I got crap from Bella about that because I called you Big Daddy Yum Yum on my Facebook
page. Yeah. I saw that.
All right, everybody. That was part two with Big Daddy Yum Yum, Byron Wilcott. Every time I say that, I laugh because he gives me a hard time about it, and there's a few others who do as well. So that was part two, and you heard his explanation about the Kia Stevens Awesome Kong story. So hopefully that cleared the air well with that situation, and you now have some resolution to the mystery that you may have heard about many years ago. So, and then we'll move on from there. I got Doc Turner on the line tonight. We're gonna sit here. We're gonna go through the week in review. We're also gonna answer some fan questions that we did receive via the BTT_podcast on Twitter and on Facebook at Booking the Territory. So, Doc, what's happening tonight?
Man, it's just another day in my life. I'm having a hard time holding these gators down.
That you ain't seen a gator your whole life. Shut your ass up. Stupid. Oh, man. If I saw you a pair of gators, I think I'd start laughing. Hey, let's jump in real quick. The first thing I want to do is let's go through these fan questions that we got from Twitter. So I will start. And this is something we're going to discuss anyway. One question says, when Jarrett says there will be a partnership that will blow everyone's mind between TNA and Global, what do you think he's got in his back pocket when he says will blow everyone's mind? And let me reiterate what he said. Jeff Jarrett announced on Impact TNA, he says that there is 100% certainty that there is a future with Global Force Wrestling and TNA. He adds that it's going to shock some people. I will let you share your thoughts, and then I'll share mine.
Well, see, I think he got a little confused, and when he said it's going to blow our minds, what he really meant is watching his nonsense is going to make us want to blow the back of our heads off with a shotgun. See, I watch this, and on some little level, if we're going to hotshot the territory and invade TNA, it sounds interesting. But Jeff Jarrett's going to book himself to go over, and it's going to be business as usual. We're going to be here in 2 months, and TNA is going to be off Destination America looking for TV, and I'm not going to have a Southern-style wrestling federation to follow. That's what I think.
So that's your prediction. In 2 months, TNA is going to be off the air, and you won't have a promotion to watch Southern Style and the mantra of NWA from when we were kids. That's your prediction about this whole thing.
I think that no matter what they do in the next 6 to 8 weeks, they're off Destination America in September.
Okay, off Destination America with no TV at all, nothing, no other type of outlet to their product as far as TV goes, or off Destination America and they are on another or have something else, some other type of TV program in the works?
I don't know. Maybe Jarrett can go back to running those weekly $9.95 pay-per-views. I can ignore him in 2015 just like I did in 2002.
Okay. Well, here's the thing. I can't disagree with you that there may be some problems, and who knows what happens with the network with Destination America. But if anything is going to save this company, it's what he announced. Because, as I said last week, there's a world of talent that he's now going to have. I mean, hey, we had a listener comment. I was going to get to this in a second ago. But I had tweeted out, you know, what do y'all think about Ethan Carter III winning the TNA world title? And immediately got a reply that said, you know what, that's all right, but the big news of the night is Bobby Roode leaving for Global. Well, when Jarrett makes a statement that Global is going to now be working with this partnership with TNA, and who knows if they're going to co-brand or whatever, well, guess what? Jarrett's got Bobby Roode. He's got other guys. He's got Magnus. He's got these guys who are now – they're now Global guys. So, I mean, are we really – are we really seeing a transition, or are we just going to see – I mean, are we going to see really TNA go away, or just TNA rebranded as Global? Well, he says it's going to shock everyone. Maybe when he said he's going to shock everyone, he's going to bring back Cornette. I don't know, shit.
Well, that'd be smart, but here's the thing. What has Jeff Jarrett learned in the last 5 years is going to mean that something different is going to happen? See, he's got a lot of the same guys he had that he ended up having to sell off to Dixie in the first place. So it just seems like we are caught in the cycle, and, you know, it's easy to get excited because we all need a savior from Dixie's malfeasance. That's my 50-cent word of the day, in running this company straight down the toilet. But I'm not sure Jeff Jarrett, I mean, that's one of those things where we run off all the cats with dogs, and now we got a dog problem. So what animal are we going to bring in to get rid of the dogs?
Okay, so you really believe there's just going to be out of the picture. There's going to be no more.
And here's the thing. I hope not. I hope there. I mean, it's great having options to watch and nights full of wrestling to watch. But, man, haven't we been down this road before?
I don't know. We'll see. I mean, we'll see. So, well, I appreciate that question from the listener who sent it in. Another question. If Kevin Owens loses to Finn Balor on the 4th of July in Japan, do you guys think that he will win the U.S. title from Cena? I'm assuming this person means at the next pay-per-view or whatever the hell they want to call him now.
Sounds like some of our fans and listeners are trying to book a territory. Leave that to the experts.
Sometimes I think they'd book it better than you. Jesus, Lord.
Come on now. No, I think that listener hit it right on the head. I think that's exactly what's going to happen. I think Owens goes over there, drops the title to Finn, and comes back and wins the U.S. title from Cena.
The only reason I want to go against that is because I think that's the too predictable.
Oh, like, the only reason you want to go against it is because it would hurt your feelings that Cena would lose his second-tier title.
Oh, here we go. Well, the fact of the matter is Cena's probably one of the best talents they got, and he's been doing it for a long time, so you can stick it.
So let me ask you this. So if you're sitting there watching the TV with your hustle, loyalty, and respect shirt on, and he loses.
Oh, yeah, brother, I got the band. I got the freaking bands on my wrist and everything.
You're going to rip off the wristbands and throw them at the TV?
I probably would.
What a mark.
the mark of all marks says that. Okay, real good. All right, so last question, because to answer that last question, the only reason I say that's not going to happen is because it seems too predictable. It just really does, that Owens would lose and then Cena all of a sudden drops to Owens. It just seems too predictable. It seems like something else may be in the works, but who knows? What do I know? So I say no. Doc Turner says yes, but what does he know? He's an idiot. All right, next question. What is TNA going to do now that they have lost Aries, Rude, Magnus, Storm, etc.? Well, that kind of ties into the very first question where, well, Rude and Magnus are now Global. So, and with Global working with TNA, is there really much of a change? I don't know. What do you think?
I think you're going to see a whole lot of the same characters just in an invasion angle. Or, God forbid, God help us, I mean, we might see an extended segments with the bromance. And if that's the case, I'll have to get my fast forward button ready.
I don't think they're going to do an invasion angle, but that's just me. Hopefully they won't. It just won't work. So that's just my opinion. All right, that's all I got from my fan questions. So everybody that sent in a question this week, we really appreciate it. Don't forget, do it weekly. I check it often. It's at BTT underscore podcast. That's at BTT underscore podcast on Twitter. All right, go ahead. I'll let you lead into the next segment. What you got, Doc? Probably some
well,
more BS.
I guess we should talk about Raw. And 180 minutes isn't enough because it always goes past 10 o'clock, a few more minutes. But they started out with a segment when the Authority comes out and Seth Rollins is appreciative of the help he got from the Authority. And he had a pretty good line. I wrote this down so I wouldn't forget it. He said, "I took a trip to Suplex City and I burned it to the ground." So tough talk from him before he gets his ass whooped by Brock at some point. He gave out gifts. It was some sort of Price is Righty, let's make a deal kind of segment where corporate Kane gets to go to Hawaii. And I was just thinking about Kane in his red mask sitting on the beach with long hair sticking out. That made me pop a little bit. And he gave a car away. And man, I sat there thinking that car is going to get destroyed before the end of the night. But I don't think they ever got there. Anyway, that goes on way too long, just like it always does. But what do you think about them bringing the Authority back together and Rollins seemingly making good with his crew?
It's boring me. I don't know what they're doing with it. I'm just bored with it, to be honest with you. And it's not Rollins. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. The Authority gimmick, it's just gone on for too long, and if anything, Seth Rollins is actually helping it. I mean, he's helping it survive, because at this point I'm just tired of it. I want to see something else, and it has nothing to do with the guys that are doing it. This is just a writing perspective that I'm referencing right now. I'm just burnt out on it.
Yeah, it feels like that first segment of Raw is never a wrestling match, always too long, and it kind of the poke in the side of the ribs of the boys to say, we're the writers, and we're going to show you who's in charge by leading off the show with what we have for you. So anyway,
I'm fine. I mean, I'm fine with Rollins the way he's been gold on a microphone. I mean, that dude's been gold. Hey, you even said it a second ago. Rollins mentions he's cutting that promo kind of on Brock, and you know, right before Brock's going to beat his ass. But to me, that's old school. I mean, that's like when Flair used to come out and talk all kind of noise. Now he basically got his butt handed to him the whole match, and then turns around and wins. So it just reminds me of something like that when you say that.
Yeah. So then, because the WWE is fresh and exciting, we had back-to-back matches, and I don't even know who was fighting who because I didn't care enough. But the Big Show, Mark Henry, Miz, and Ryback with run-ins and nonsense. And my note here says, yawn. At least four guys I don't care about getting it out of the way in hour one. You know, Show is a good dude. The guy has jobbed his seven-foot ass out to everybody in the damn Federation now for the last couple of years, but you could take Miz and Ryback out to the I don't know, put them out to pasture forever as far as I'm concerned. So
yeah.
I'm gonna go ahead and assume you feel pretty similar to me on that one and move on to the Divas.
I thought that was good. I didn't have a problem with that match.
I like Paige. I'm going to say this right now. I like Paige.
Yeah.
I wrote down a note here. I wrote a lot of notes this week. I came prepared.
About damn time. Slacking ass.
I wrote down that the crowd is dead during this match. So, again, you know, you got to wonder. You got a bunch of, I think Paige actually has some skill, but a lot of those other females look like they're still the swimsuit model. You have the females that can go down at NXT. You got to wonder when we're going to start seeing Flair's daughter, Sasha Banks, and really hopefully put an infusion of girls that can, if we're going to have girls in matches, girls that can put on credible athletic contests.
Mm-hmm.
But yep. here's the one I want to talk about, and I really want to get your opinion on.
Okay.
And that's your boy, John Cena comes out.
Yeah.
And then Owens comes out. And Owens does his powder out and says, oh, I'm not going to fight you tonight, but this guy will. And the sirens go off, and out comes Cesaro. So we move Owens to commentary. He's the third color commentator guy in the booth of a four-man booth now, which made it hard for him to kind of get his work in, but whatever. That's not really the thing I wanted to ask you to talk about, because at this point, in my opinion, Cesaro and Cena proceeded to tear the damn house down. So, and they went for a while, too. So what were your thoughts about that one?
Those dudes basically gave you a pay-per-view type performance match. I mean, just unreal. I have been a Cesaro fan for a long time, and to see him get that spot on Raw, to do the things that he did, that crowd was on fire the whole time. I mean, they did not sit down the entire time. It was a 5-star match. That European uppercut spot was unreal, where he pops Cena up and then hits him. Cena looked like he was flying, and that's
Cena
a big
like
dude.
Cena looked like he was coming down, bringing rain with him too. He was
And Cesaro's a machine. He's just incredibly strong. They had that tornado DDT spot where they kicked out. The drop kick that Cesaro did in the corner that sent Cena flying outside. I mean, the guy is just an athlete. It was incredible. I everything about that match. I'm mentioning a few spots that I saw. Everything about that match though was incredible. There was nothing lacking. It was all about Cena and Owens. That match technically was all about Cena and Owens, I guess, but. To say that you know he would have been, I guess, a third wheel, it goes to show you there's no doubt that Cesaro should be in that title picture somewhere. Whether it's there's no reason right now that dude could not be in the world title picture. Like, I could see him, put it this way, there aren't many people on that roster that you would buy that could defeat Brock Lesnar. Let's just assume he eventually wins the title. Cesaro is one of those people that I could buy in there against Brock as defeating him at some point. So I know I got off track, and you know it was
I'm going to take it a step further.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
A few months ago, first of all, as dead as the crowd was during the Divas match, that crowd was hot during this match. So these two guys turned a dead crowd in the match before into out of their seats. That right there, you know, Vince says, I'm listening to the crowd. Well, open up your ears, old man, because it was right there for you. He also went on Stone Cold's podcast a few months ago and said, you know, Cesaro just hasn't grabbed the brass ring. I tell you what, he grabbed that bitch right there. Monday night. He sure did. And so if I'm Vince, I'm telling you right now, I'm not waiting for Tyson Kidd to get healthy. Because we don't know when that – I mean, from everything I've heard, that guy had major neck surgery.
Oh, yeah. If you saw the pictures online, in the staples in the back of his neck, it's incredible.
And so I'm taking Cesaro right now, and I'm elevating him because he grabbed the brass ring. So, you know, the days of Cesaro and Kidd as a tag team, which I enjoyed, may be over.
But, it might be. It might be. And I told you when those two started tagging, and you still bag on Tyson Kidd because you don't like Natalya, that Tyson Kidd is one of the best talents on that roster. And as great as Cesaro was in that team, Kidd was just as great. I get tired of Tyson Kidd not getting his due.
Okay, but Tyson Kidd is in a hospital bed right now, and Cesaro was slinging John Cena around the ring.
Like, oh yeah, yeah. I'm not gonna argue that. So we're in agreement there.
And I'll give you a bunch of shit about Cena, but I mean, it takes two to tango, and Cena was right there with him on Monday night. Those two guys went, like you said, pay-per-view style through two commercial breaks. And my other problem with it was, and I understand why you got to do it this way, once you commit to having Owens out there. But I know Cesaro wasn't going to beat Cena, but I just wanted a clean finish on it. And I know you can't do it because you have Owens out there. But it felt cheap to have them go for so long and bust ass and then have it schmaltz out with Owens jumping in the ring.
You know what's funny? You mentioned about the finish. And you wanted to see a clean finish. When I met, you haven't heard this yet, obviously, because it hasn't dropped and you weren't on the phone with me. But when Dell the Patriot Wilkes was on the phone with me, he said that he was talking about his time in Japan. He goes, man, everything was a clean finish. There was no run-in. There was no managers. Clean finish. He said, we got over. We were printing money, baby.
Because I guarantee you this. The two guys in that ring, now I get you don't want to hurt Cena with a loss before Owens gets him. I got no problem with that, and I got no problem with Cesaro doing the job, because at the end of the day, that guy did enough to lose 1-2-3 and not get hurt by anything. But I just, you know, the person who likes legitimate athletic endeavors, just, man, let it finish. Let it play out. Don't pick that scab. So, but hey, that's a minor nitpick on what was easily head and shoulders the best part of Raw, and probably the best thing I've seen on Raw other than Owens slamming that stupid white rapper through the power bombing him off the stage a few weeks ago in quite a while though.
Here's the thing you're missing. I don't mind the finish. I don't mind the interference. You know why? Because even if people would cheer Owens because he's causing Cena a match, they're not going to cheer Owens for causing Cesaro a match. So I'm fine with what they did with Owens because it further establishes him as a heel.
Here's the other thing I thought of watching that match. If Cesaro looked like Ziggler, he'd be pushed further.
I don't agree with that. All right. He looks fine.
I think so too, but I think in Vince's mind, Cesaro kind of has the receding, but it's shaved, and he doesn't speak perfect English, and he just doesn't know what to do with it.
Nah, I don't know if that's it. I don't really. So, I don't know why he's not getting a push. I wish I knew somebody up there that could say it. But I guarantee you, you're about to see him get a push, and he's going to start getting a push. You bet your ass on that. If he doesn't, man, I don't know what to say at this point.
Well, he's one guy that could slow down my fast-forward button march through the 3 hours, I'll tell you that. Because I watched it.
I hear you. Shocking for you, actually. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. Continue.
And really, after that, it was just a cavalcade of bullshit for the rest of the Raw. But the one thing I wanted to ask you is...
Is that what your notes say? A cavalcade of bullshit?
No, I got notes, but I want to get to other stuff on this podcast, and I spent all night talking about Sheamus and Sad Rusev and Barrett. And so, look, I watched it. I know what happened, but I don't really want to talk about it. The thing I wanted to talk about before we get off the WWE is this. I started thinking about this week watching wrestling. Are guys overrated or underrated?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a nebulous. And there's two guys that I came to really think about, and overrated, underrated. So the first guy that I want to ask you, is he overrated or underrated, is Bray Wyatt.
I don't think he's either. I think he's well placed right now.
So here's what I got when I'm thinking Higgins.
But go ahead. Why don't you tell me? I got a feeling you're going to say he's overrated.
I think it's more complicated than that. So grab your crayons and see if you can keep up. So he's overrated in the landscape that he's in. Man, if you put that character back in the 80s or even the ECW 90s and really let it get evil and let it push the boundaries of questionable good taste and really, really get under people's skin, because it was real creepy when he had Rowan and Harper and they had the sheet mask and all that other stuff. It got creepy. But, man, you know what this guy does? He picks out some guy out of random. He tries to get under their skin. And he jobs at the pay-per-view. And then you know what he does? He comes out the next Monday night and he picks somebody else out and he tries to get under their skin. And then he jobs to him at the pay-per-view. And so he's overrated, but I don't think it's his fault. I think it's the product of, can you take a character like that and truly push it to the edge in a corporate environment?
No, you can't, probably.
So I end up not giving a shit.
I hear you, man. I hear you. No. Makes sense. No, that makes sense. All right, what else you got?
That's, man, I say we move on to either TNA or ROH, and I'll let you pick.
Go to TNA.
All right, well, we go down to, we had an impact here. And it's almost a pastime of mine to say that Impact is god-awful and terrible, but I'm going to tell you, I actually enjoyed this week's Impact. And the tough part I had was trying to keep straight post-pay-per-view, when this was taped, who knows what, when, all kinds of shit. But just sitting down and watching it for a couple hours, I actually enjoyed it. What do you think about the show overall?
It was okay. Last week was better. I got to be honest. With TNA right now, there's two things keeping me watching it. One is this show, this podcast. And two is I am really, really excited to see and anxious to see what happens with the whole Global thing. Because I have a buddy who worked for Global, worked for Jarrett last weekend. And I'm just really excited to see what ends up happening with that situation with Global and TNA. Honestly, that's the thing that's keeping me glued to it. As far as what I thought about the show, here was my problem with it. I knew the Dirty Heels were going to lose because Austin Aries and Rude are supposedly gone, per se. So that kind of threw it off. There was 50 million spoilers on the goddamn internet that I'm getting sick of, with people posting who won between Angle and EC3, even though I think we all knew what was going to happen. So I kind of knew that was coming. I'm trying to think what else was there. Taryn Terrell beat Awesome Kong in that three-way deal. There was interference, but what she did to her, she hit her with a diamond cutter. I just don't buy that on a big old chick like Awesome Kong, Kia Stevens. I just can't buy it. So I was disappointed in that part of it. I'm trying to think what else. BDC and the Rising. I'm glad you asked me. You know what? That's my last thing. I was so ready for that stupidity to end, and by no means am I talking about it from an MVP and the whole BDC point of view, because I like those guys. Every one of those dudes, especially Hernandez now, you know, with Kenny King, Loki's gone, but MVP's there. I was so ready for that to end because it just didn't make any sense anymore. They did a pipe on a pole match at one point. They did these different gimmick matches, and it's been going on. Do you realize how it's been going on since March or February? You realize that, right?
No.
It's just an everlasting.
It just seems that way.
It's an everlasting, you know, 3-4 month thing. And I'm okay with 3 to 4 months before I start getting friggin' hate mail about, oh, well, that's an angle. It's got to play out. We've seen angles play out over a year. Yeah, I remember when Sabu and Taz did the whole, you know, for a year they didn't touch each other, and they had that angle where they built up before the pay-per-view, before I think it was ECW's first pay-per-view. So I understand long angles, so don't send me no stupidity on Twitter about long angles. I get it. The problem with that was it was a long angle that made no sense. like, I just could never buy that the Rising, what the hell was the Rising? Rising for what? God damn, I didn't want to get this mad, but I am. So anyway, you wanted my opinion on TNA, and that's what it is.
Well, you know, I honestly, when the BDC came out, Fight the Rising, I didn't know who was going to win that. I legit had no clue who was going to win because BDC jobs out every week. I just figured we'd just keep going, and then it just hit copy and paste on that on their script. But I'm glad that they won. They're teasing a, you know, afterwards they teased a Kenny King MVP dissension, which doesn't make a lot of sense in light of Loki leaving.
Hey, real quick, I caught something during that segment that just, like, floored me, and I'll tell you why. So it was quite obvious that that segment was taped, obviously, prior to the match or at some other day and time, right? Because those three dudes had just come out of a 20-minute match and didn't have a drop of sweat on them at all. Did you notice that?
But they were 4-on-1 on Callaway, so they didn't have sweat.
I don't give a damn. When they walked out of the ring, they were sweating. It's just little stuff like that that kind of makes me mad. But anyway.
Okay, so that's the point. In the age of smart, in the age of spoilers, look, your secrets are going to get out. Kayfabe is dead. But there's still a way that you can present this intelligently and not screw it up. And we'll get to one way I thought they, you know, did that in a little bit. But definitely, I'd say we're both glad that the Rising is now no more. BDC goes over. They come back from commercial from that, and Magnus is in the ring. Mickey James is alive. She doesn't have a scratch on her. And
James, hey, what do you think about Mickey James, man? You think Mickey James is attractive, or is she too thick for you?
I love all women. I think all women bring something to the table. But why would I go? Mickey James is a happily engaged woman to Magnus.
You sound like a dumbass. Okay, proceed. I didn't mean to cut you off.
James Storm comes out and basically cuts the most misogynistic, pro-domestic violence promo. God almighty. I just said
it was fine. It was fine. I was all right with that. I was all right with it. The problem with all this is
nobody
we know that they're leaving.
Nobody there is with the company next week.
And I'm going to tell you what the other problem, not only that, but we know that they're not with the company any longer. They're going to be there for a few more weeks TV-wise because they filmed these episodes another four to 6 weeks out, I believe. But we know they're not going to be there. We saw what happened on Sunday. I don't know what more they can really do with the angle. Oh, God. I really want them to succeed. Please, Jeff Jarrett, come in, bring your crew in, make it right, because there's talent there. The ones that you've pillaged and taken, there's tons of talent. You can do a lot with it. Please make it right. But anyway, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Speaking of talent, you know, the Heels and the Wolves came out for their 30-minute Iron Man match. And this was just, you know, it was the fifth in the series. These guys have been tearing it up. They've been going at it. And I don't think this one was any different. The problem I have with this that was just an insult to my intelligence is that, first of all, they went 25 minutes in before somebody got a pin. Dirty Heels get the pin. I like that. I like that it was, well, hey, what happens if this thing goes the whole way? Start building that up that suspense. And then they start saying it was like 3 minutes to go. They start showing the strategy that the Dirty Heels are going to try to, you know, quote unquote, run the clock out. Like that, too. Somebody using strategy to try to win a match. Novel concept. But now, with a minute to go, the Wolves pull two pins in a minute to take the tag title. Now, I get that the Wolves had to win that match, but we're supposed to believe that Bobby Roode and Austin Aries are so ridiculously stupid that they're going to figure out how to get pinned twice in a minute when they went 25 minutes without getting pinned at the beginning. Come on.
I'm going to say it again. That part I didn't even care about. You know why? Because I knew Aries and Roode were gone, and I knew there was no way they were going to win. So as I'm watching it, they could have put on a five-star clinic, and I might not have cared.
So,
I really might not have cared. The last week's notices and the last week's the communication and everything about the talent that's leaving, it has pretty much ruined it for me at this point. Like ruined these next few weeks. I just there's nothing there at this point for me. I'm not knocking the guys that are there because there's really not – well, I can't say there's not one person there that I don't like. I mean, Koya can't work, but that's just my opinion. There's nothing there. It's hard to watch it when you know all those guys are leaving. It's like, what am I watching?
You know what's hard to watch for me is that I keep thinking about when I watch that show, I can think about Dixie sitting in her mansion eating caviar while she can't pick out her checkbook and pay her production staff. Come on, Dixie. That's some bullshit.
That is kind of rough.
Knockouts, we already talked about it. I don't give a shit about them. And Jarrett, you know, my note on that was, so I guess Jarrett bought TNA. EC3 and Angle, what did you think of that match? I mean, we both figured that EC3 was going over. Read the spoilers, but...
Oh, well, yeah, and I didn't even try to read it. It's just you couldn't go anywhere online on the Internet without seeing it. I mean, anything you went to, you were going to see what the outcome was. So I was fine with it. You know, I like EC3. I like his work. He's a really good heel, and I'm good with it.
I thought, first of all, Angle dropped like 15 or 16 German suplexes. It was a suplex. I don't know if it was Suplex City, but it was at least a suburb of Suplex City. A couple of things I thought about that. First of all, I thought when it was done, Angle did a really good job of selling it, like he was really disappointed in himself for losing it, so he kind of sold it and kept it good there. The other thing I thought that was good is that Tyrus got kicked to the back before the match ended, and they actually let EC3 win it clean, and I thought that was really good for him. That hopefully it legitimizes him as a champion going forward while apparently Angle's out getting a tumor taken off of his neck is what I heard.
Yeah, and the only question I have now is what happens from here with the world title, TNA world title.
Yeah. So there's more questions than answers when it comes to TNA. You know, I want Jeff Jarrett to fix all this. The definition of insanity creeps up. I want there to be another place for guys to go get paychecks. I hope they do all get paid, unlike with Dixie. And selfishly, I want to be able to watch a wrestling promotion that has its roots in style back to the Southern NWA type wrestling. So, with that, let's move over to ROH. Did you get a chance to catch the show this week?
Not all of it. So I'm going to let you, I will catch it at some point in the next day or two. But I'm going to let you go ahead and comment on it.
They were at the 2300 Arena, which is better known to a lot of us as the old ECW Arena.
Yep.
In Philly. And so they had three matches on here that were all good. To me, ROH and New Japan are – they're both programs where at the very least you're going to get an hour's worth of very enjoyable wrestling. And then there's a few weeks where you're like, holy shit, they went all out. You know, I don't think this is one of those weeks, but I never get done with the hour and say, what a waste either. And I certainly didn't on this one either. They had Adam Page come out and fight Watanabe. Man, Watanabe was super over with the crowd. They were chanting his name. I had a note here, man. I really thought, I think Adam Page could get more ass than a toilet seat if he was looked like that back in about 1985 at the Sportatorium in Dallas working a world-class championship wrestling, being a buddy with Chris Adams and Iceman in that kind of, and the Von Erichs being a second tier guy, that guy just, I don't know, he screams 1985 to me for some reason, and I don't mean that in a bad way. But those two guys had a good match. They had Addiction, and I know you're a big fan of Addiction with Daniels and Kazarian versus Guido and Okada. And, man, I just do not like Okada in a tag team environment. He's one of those guys that, to me, he's very stoic. He's kind of slow. It's a slow build with him. You know, I think he's one of those guys that needs 25, 30-minute matches just so that he can kind of build up, get going. And it's just, it seems awkward to me when he comes in the stops and spurts that a tag match provides. But again, you know, good match.
Yeah, I can't. Anytime I see him, it's always gold. I mean, even in a tag match. So, you know, it wasn't as great as the single stuff that you've seen from his New Japan on the New Japan stuff, but it was still really good.
So the main event, if you will, was Adam Cole versus AJ Styles. And here we go with my next my question to you. Is AJ Styles overrated?
Hell no.
Okay.
Why do you think – I mean, are you saying he is?
I like him okay. Every time I watch him on a card, I never think he's clearly the best guy on the card. So, yeah, I like him, but I don't think – I never watch his matches and say, he's head and shoulders the best guy here.
Okay. I mean but do you – I mean, how many guys are you going to say that about, that they're head and shoulders better than anybody else here? How many guys are you going to say that about? Think about it.
Well, when I watch ROH, I think the Briscoes and Jay Lethal are head and shoulders above everybody else. Do you agree?
Yes, but again, you can't say that about every single. There's only going to be X amount of people you're going to say that about on any promotion.
True, that's what I'm saying. There's only it's only elite of the elite, and I think.
But that don't mean he's over. That doesn't mean he's overrated. He definitely ain't overrated. I don't care what anybody says. He ain't even close to being overrated.
Now, because, you know, Doc Turner takes no bumps and has never been in the ring, and you never hesitate to remind me of that. I have a couple of questions for you that I wrote down during this match that maybe will help our listeners like myself who haven't been in the locker room, haven't been in the ring, sort of understand how some of this stuff works. So this is a question I have for you to hopefully draw on your limited experience as a marginal independent wrestler to help us understand what goes into putting together a match. Number one.
I'm listening.
So New Japan and ROH are doing a co-promotion tour. Fantastic. Love it. But how do they decide who goes over in the matches? And won't that be an ongoing – part two of that is, won't that be an ongoing issue depending on how the global agreement is? So the first part is New Japan comes over. They're going to fight ROH guys, fight New Japan guys. What's the thought process going there about which guys get the nod?
The first thing is they must have some type of obviously they have a signed agreement to use talent, but you have to be – they both trust each other very well or very much to where they're sharing this talent and will put each other over, or, you know, somebody's got to, I guess, put the other over at some point in time. You got to remember, too, we're only seeing the TV portions of this stuff, so there's plenty of other times when you know, one guy may be putting over another guy and vice versa, you know, on different road shows or house shows, so to say. So it's a complex question that doesn't have just one answer. From you know, from my point of view. At the end of the day, whether you're putting someone over or not, the thing is, if you pay attention, nobody's burying anybody. Does that make sense?
Well,
you understand what I mean by burying?
Yes, but okay. Yes and no, because my next question sort of kind of goes to that. So I'm going to go ahead and ask you my next question. Adam Cole and AJ Styles had a really good match. I enjoyed it real good. But at one point, Adam Cole hit AJ Styles with a Styles Clash, which is obviously AJ's finishing move. Is that seen as sort of, I mean, obviously AJ didn't have a big problem with it or he wouldn't have let it happen, but is that seen as sort of a trade-off or sign of disrespect, do you think?
I don't think so. I don't think so at all. He's not going to let him, first off, that's disgust in the back, and he's not going to let that happen if he doesn't want it to. He's not going to agree to it, first off. He's not going to agree to it at some point, and he's not going to go through with it if he really didn't want to. I've seen plenty of times where guys don't want to do something and they don't do it in the ring. Believe.
Okay, so yeah. So yeah, I get the fact that, I mean, all the matches that I've seen with the
let me say this about the whole New Japan ROH thing and, you know, could that cause dissension? At the end of the day, if it makes sense, it doesn't matter who's winning and losing. That's what a lot of guys don't understand.
I agree that and every time I watch them, it's an entertaining match, and both guys are getting, you know, getting their shit in, and it's entertaining, and it's very back and forth. One guy just goes over, or tag team goes over. But from your experience, that, you know, isn't that kind of rare that you would see two promotions work that well together when you've seen independent promotions who couldn't agree that today is Wednesday?
Yeah, well, a lot of times with independent promotions, you probably got two promoters that aren't the most experienced and really might not know what they're doing. I mean, at the same time, I see independent promotions that work well together. You just don't hear about them as often. But, yeah, I mean, to your point, there could be some dissension. But I think that it seems like the partnership is going well, and it's been going well for a long time, and I don't see it ending. It's they probably have some type of you know, agreement in place where they're going to protect their guys. But again, I'm just going to say it, as long as it makes sense, as long as what they're doing makes sense, it doesn't matter who wins. It just doesn't. I mean, I've seen plenty of matches where the guy who wins where the guy who lost is actually the one who got over. You know, I go back to the time period that we grew up watching wrestling. Did Flair really win his matches? You know, like when he was, you know, when he had the title all those years, did he really win? He wasn't winning. I mean, the other guy got over. Flair won technically, but he didn't win. He retained the belt in many instances. So same concept that, you know, Ring of Honor and New Japan are using. It's not a matter of who, and if you watch those matches, both guys get over. The winner at the end of the day means nothing. That's actually what I like about Ring of Honor so much. It's because you and I do it all the time. We sit there and watch New Japan, and we're like, holy crap, man, them dudes are going at it. That strong style stuff ain't no joke.
Well,
I mean, you'll hear it. You'll even hear it. Like Dale Wilkes talks about it on the July 4th special episode. He talked a little bit about Japan, and, you know, and he even said it on Stone Cold's podcast too, but the whole style is different. It's a rugged style. Well, we see that when they come over into ROH. You know, we see that style and they combine. And basically you see two promotions and two groups of guys that just really, really go at it, beat the hell out of each other. And at the end of the day, that's all that matters.
I'm not saying it's about the in the ring guy. I'm saying it's you got the promotion sitting in the back booking the show, and it's like, okay, we've given you guys two going overs. We need to win a match here, you know, because so it doesn't come across as one group getting buried.
I'll say this: it's probably rare. It is rare that it continues to last as long as it does without any type of disagreement or dissension, like, you know, coming in.
I will say that. But at the same time, the one thing, again, that those two promotions do really, really well is it really doesn't matter who wins or loses. They're both guys, or in tag teams, four guys are getting over generally. And as long as they both, as long as everyone gets over, and who wins and loses, it don't make a bit of, it doesn't matter at all.
Well, Mike, I've led you and drug you through about 50 minutes of reviewing the week of wrestling. I'm pretty tired, so I think, don't you think it's about time we start winding this thing down?
Yeah, I do. What else you got before I start talking about what I got that we're going to go home with?
It's July the 4th weekend, listeners, so if you're going to shoot fireworks off, at least drink as much beer as you can before you blow off your right arm.
Is that it? That's all you got?
Happy birthday, America.
All right. So before I get in the closing credits, I'll call them, I just want to plug the sponsor one more time, TNA Wrestling Palace, one-stop shop in DFW. Look them up on Facebook under TNA's Wrestling Palace. They're your one-stop shop for all your wrestling memorabilia needs. We appreciate them. They support us, so you help support them. Other thing I got is, let's see. I'm forgetting where I was at. Oh, so a couple of I wanted to plug a couple of independent shows because, you know, that's where I spent a lot of my time when I was working, obviously, and although it was many years ago. So a couple of them that I saw online that are coming up, there's one of them is NWA Texoma. They're going to be in at the Sherman Elks Lodge in Sherman, Texas, bell times 8 p.m. on July the 17th. Imperial Wrestling Federation has a card also in Ardmore, Oklahoma, at the HFV Wilson Community Center on July the 25th, bell time 7 p.m. And a big show that I'm definitely going to plug because I have many of friends that work for this promotion will be the Wildcat Sports and Entertainment show titled X-Rated in New Orleans on Saturday night, August 15th. Bell time is at 7 p.m. It's at the Shamrock Bar and Grill. Tickets went on sale today. We're filming this on July 2nd. On that card will be ECW Originals Sabu and Stevie Richards, along with Luke Hawks is on it, Tracy Smothers is on it, and the rest of the Wildcat crew. It's an adult-only show, and trust me, you do not want to miss it. Actually, in the upcoming weeks, I've already got one conversation recorded with the Shalmation sensation, Danny Flamingo. He's going to be on the show in the coming weeks. He was plugging the Wildcat show that's going to be on August 15th, and I'm looking forward to get a couple other guys and some of the ladies that they have there on the show as well, so I'm working on that. Anyway, you definitely don't want to miss that show, August 15th, Wildcat Sports. Go to their page on Facebook, plenty of information there. Got a phone number where you can get tickets and everything. That's on at Wildcat Sports and Entertainment on Facebook. And that's pretty much all I got. Doc, you sure you don't have anything else before we wrap this thing up and I sign us off?
Let's hold on. Drink beer, check. Shoot fireworks, check. Happy birthday. I'm good. Let's go.
Okay. All right, y'all. So we appreciate you joining us. So, again, this is part two. Hopefully you enjoy the conversation that I had with Byron Wilcock. I'm just going to say one thing about next week's episode. Next week, Byron gets into a discussion with me about Bill DeMott. Yes, Bill DeMott that trained at WWE Developmental in NXT. So it is a very interesting discussion. I don't want to let the cat out of the bag. You're going to have to listen. But let's just say Byron does not hold anything back. Big Daddy Yum Yum lets it fly, and he don't give two shits about what he says. So that's all I'm going to say. You're going to have to tune in next Friday, catch the show. It's extremely interesting, and I'll leave it at that. The other thing, if you haven't already heard it, because it's going to drop the same day as this one, I had a conversation with Del the Patriot Wilkes. This was coming off of his appearance on the Stone Cold Steve Austin podcast. We did not talk about the same stuff that he talked about with Stone Cold because I really felt that would be really stupid to do. We talked about a few other things. Dell is a big-time college football fan, and we spent some time talking about that. We also spent a lot of time talking about what he thought about the Sportatorium in Dallas and some of his stories there and how the Patriot gimmick was born. Very interesting conversation. He's a great guy. He was very gracious with his time to me. Please tune in. Go download that one. That one will be up the same day as this one. This is generally the only week we're going to do two. I wanted to do something for July 4th since I had the Patriot on. So that's pretty much all I got. Follow us on Facebook on their Book in the Territory. And then follow us on Twitter at BTT_podcast. And then I had a question in the inbox. Not that I'm popular or anything, but somebody wanted my Twitter. My Twitter is at Mike504Saint. So until next week, it's Mike and Doc. We'll catch you later. Book it. So you really don't like me. So you really don't.